Well, hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also animal familiars. We're your hosts. My name is Alex, and next to me is
Jacob. And you know, if you haven't heard it, you gotta like, you gotta subscribe, rate, comment. We appreciate all those things. But we're back.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, and we are starting to get into summer. I don't know about you, Jacob. I'm enjoying the improvements in New York weather. Been having some folks coming to visit the city who are like, man, I want to move here. It's beautiful. And it's like, well, it's not always like this, but at the moment it's been okay.
Yeah, it has. And this is one of the two times a year where New York City and surrounding areas are really nice. It's the month of May and then fall. Pretty much any other time, it's not that fun.
Exactly. Well, so let's dive right into a few things worth talking about this week. It'll probably be a pretty short episode, but we like to catch up with each other. We like to catch up with our lovely audience. So we'll go through a few news items. First thing I want to bring up is, Jacob, have you heard at all about this announcement from ILM? They have an app that they're going to come out with on Apple Vision Pro. It's called What If, based on the Disney Plus series of the same name.
I have not heard about it, so you're going to have to tell me all about it, Alex.
Well, let's see, because we're on Zoom today, because our studio is under construction. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, and we'll talk a little bit about what comes up over here in this little press release. So, screen share is loading. Great. So What If, for anyone who doesn't know, is a series where everyone at Marvel gets to have some fun with some alternate storylines. They're animated. They have what's his name? Jeffrey Rush, I believe, as the watcher who kind of is perusing all the multiverses and seeing crazy things like, you know, there was a zombie Doctor Strange. And of course, we have Hayley Atwell as Agent Carter slash a different version of Captain America. I watched it a while ago, so I'm blanking on like the specifics, but there's all sorts of like different realities for the Marvel Universe. So they are going to have this kind of new form of Disney Plus original story coming out that is an hour long and a mixed reality experience in the Apple Vision Pro. Now, Jacob, I have some suspicions that it is possible that even though this is an Apple Vision Pro, that it might be made in Unreal Engine. Can you take any guesses as to why I might feel that way?
Certainly we've been learning about Disney's partnership with Epic.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, their future in the multiverse. And I would also say, you know, they've done work in the past. ILM X Labs has certainly done work in the past in Unreal Engine. So one would think that if they had their choice, it would be an Unreal Engine experience.
Yes. So my speculation does not go much further than exactly what you just said. Similar thoughts. Pretty much everything that ILM X Lab, now called ILM Immersive, has done has been in Unreal Engine. This includes things like Vader Immortal and Tales from Galaxy's Edge. Even I remember years ago when they did like a slow motion thing for the Samsung Gear VR for Marvel. That was also done in Unreal Engine. And yep. So if they did do this in Unity, I think it's their first major foray into Unity. But even based on just some of the screenshots they're showing, like, I don't know, I look at something like this and I think that's probably Unreal Engine. Now, what's interesting, of course, is followers of the show will know that I have been trying to stay as much as possible at the bleeding edge of what's possible with Unreal Engine and Apple Vision Pro. And it's still pretty experimental, still something that like I wouldn't say is production ready. So either Disney and ILM have their own fork of Unreal Engine where they've gone off and done something totally crazy on their own for this, or maybe they're being very clever within the current limitations. Like, for example, this could be a lot like some of the environments that we're seeing in Apple Vision Pro already, where rather than this being like a fully built out thing that's using Lumen and Nanite and all that, it might be more, I want to say, layered, where like the objects very close to you are 3D. Maybe they are megascans or something like that. But then as you go further and further back, it becomes billboards. It becomes maybe a stereo panorama. It might even be video that you know, does the sky and things like that. But there could be a lot of very clever manipulation to have this be Unreal Engine, but not pushing the boundaries too much of what is currently possible. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that in this situation, there could be a few things going on. And this is total speculation. I get the feeling Epic has not publicly, you know, pushed a lot of support for Apple Vision Pro, because for obvious reasons, they don't particularly want to enable that device. And I think, overall, you know, don't see it as an investment that's going to pay off for the consumers. They can't really support it. You know, it's a bit of a challenge, but I don't think it's impossible that, you know, for a project of this scope, that they don't have engineering teams willing to help make this experience work. Mm-hmm. So I think it's possible that they're actively building the support for it as they put this together. And it probably still won't come out for quite a while, and it might not be a public thing. But yeah, I have to imagine that there's more support for Apple Vision Pro than we know about.
Yeah. When this does come out, I think we'll have to get our friend Steve Began back on the podcast, because this is his department. This is ILM Immersive, who's releasing this. And I'm sure a lot of it's hush-hush at the moment, but I'd love to hear more about the behind the scenes of how this has come together, how it's being worked on. It seems like they're challenging a lot of ideas of, you know, interactive story. The press release reminded me a little bit of the announcement that Hideo Kojima had with Jordan Peele at the Game Awards, I want to say, a few months back, where they were very clearly saying, like, we're not making a video game, or we're not making a movie. We're making something that's kind of this interactive, you know, in between. And it feels like they're kind of going for a similar thing here. But, you know, an hour long mixed reality experience, that's just a very sizable chunk of content compared to anything that's been released so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty substantial. Yeah, I wonder what the driver is behind a project of that scale. If it's specifically for, you know, a partnership or something that they engaged with Apple early on. If this was, yeah, I'm interested. And certainly, you know, it seems like a pretty big piece of content. So hopefully it's good. Hopefully we get better support for Apple Vision Pro. And because, yeah, I have to believe it's Unreal Engine. I don't see why you would switch engines just to support this.
The question then, though, becomes, because Epic has such a nice history of kind of giving their users, you know, whatever's at the bleeding edge. We all know, like, the stuff that's done in Fortnite trickles down pretty quickly to Unreal Engine, and anyone can hop into Source and GitHub and pull the latest. If we're right, and there is some special Disney sauce version of this going on, I guess I would wonder, is there a particular reason whatever innovation that Disney and ILM are making on the Apple Vision Pro front, if there's reasons why that isn't making its way into UE5 main, you know, maybe there's certain things that will be released later. Maybe there's things that are just ultra proprietary and custom. Any thoughts on that?
So I think they just might not have an incentive really. Push this out to the public. Once you push something out there, you have to maintain it. I don't think Epic really has an incentive to maintain this and you know, push this support for this device any further than they already have. I think it's possible at the end of the project that support gets added, or better support gets added, but I think it could be a toss-up between, hey, they're going to kind of let Disney fork the engine and they can maintain that if they want, or if they want to pull that in and make it part of the public source. So it could go either way, as far as I would guess.
Yeah. Speaking of things that Epic is not necessarily directly supporting very much, did you by any chance, I know you've been very busy, did you by any chance catch any of my recent experiments with WebXR pixel streaming?
I saw you post that it works.
Yeah. that's kind of the most exciting headline here is, for anyone who doesn't know or remember, about a year ago, I started to do some experiments with WebXR pixel streaming, supported very much by our friends over at TensorWorks. And that since became a public option available to anyone who is over in Unreal Engine. Now, the problem was that at a certain point, it really never got beyond a tech demo. Like, you could get it active. The lag was pretty bad. It was, you know, very distorted. The IPD wasn't right. And so I've been trying to find anyone interested in kind of taking where TensorWorks left things and picking up the ball and continuing further. And I finally did find a company based out of China called Paraverse Technologies, and they've got a really robust set of cloud servers around the world. And they have developed, apparently from scratch, last time I spoke to them, they didn't even realize that TensorWorks had built out like a branch of this, but they started kind of from their own tech stack and created a way to do WebXR pixel streaming that is very low latency and looks great. In here, you see me in the Apple Vision Pro. Also, I tried it in the Meta Quest Pro, and I tried it in a Quest 3. And so, of course, what's great about WebXR pixel streaming, for anyone who doesn't know, is that you don't have to download an app. You don't have to download a desktop computer. You can just go to a website, and then just like any other WebXR experience, you basically click, you know, enter VR, and then you're suddenly in the experience, because it's particularly tricky to use something like, say, NVIDIA Cloud XR with the current VR market out there, because of the fact that Meta doesn't allow you to put a cloud-based streaming service on the App Store, unless you're Xbox, apparently. And so anytime in the past when I've used Cloud XR or a similar product, you have to walk people through sideloading something and creating a developer account, and there's a lot of friction. Whereas here, it was exactly the same web link that I could go to in the Oculus browser, in the Vive browser, in the Apple Vision Pro browser. And it was not only the same experience, but like literally the same instance. So like there's a spot that I kind of left off in the Quest 3. And then when I swapped over to the Vision Pro, I was literally exactly where I'd left off, except now I had my hand tracking translating to the controller input. And that was really cool. Fun fact about this too, the problems with it, because it's not perfect yet, it's just a vast improvement. The problems that I noticed were a little bit different across Quest and Apple Vision Pro. In Quest, I found there were fewer of these kind of compression artifacts. It was like a cleaner stream, but there was a lot more distortion. If I kind of rolled my head, I'd feel the whole world go kind of wonky. In the Apple Vision Pro, there wasn't that distortion. It felt much cleaner and straighter. The compression artifacts were much worse, as you can kind of see here. It was like much harder to get a clean stream of everything. But my headline is it worked. It felt good. It didn't make me feel sick. And it is kind of, you know, making good on that promise of being able to have one experience that is going to run across a bunch of devices. Any thoughts on that, Jacob?
I mean, this is the dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's... Yeah, WebXR or pixel streaming to a VR device just makes a ton of sense. You save battery on the device itself. You get a higher fidelity experience. You sacrifice latency, and that's where the trickiest, you know, piece is. And the devices and VR headsets aren't necessarily designed for this use case. Which is where you get things like those compression artifacts. They probably don't have very big encoder decoders and stuff like that, which is important for like WebXR. So it's the kind of thing where if it worked perfectly, I think it would be a solution for everyone. But I'm really happy to see that it does work today, and you know, we're making serious progress there. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. The server I was testing on was over in Ohio, so about 600 miles away from where I am at home. And the latency was better than what I was getting testing locally, just running a pixel streaming instance on my computer to my own headset. So I'm feeling good about the direction this is headed in. I think they are starting to play with some kind of prediction algorithm to, you know, the simple version to describe it is like, if I'm turning my head at a certain rate, you can make a reasonable prediction about like where my head is going to be a few frames ahead of time, and then pre-render that out before you actually get to it. And that helps a lot with just how the whole thing feels. I'm going to do a similar thing, by the way, at Unreal Fest over in Prague. I think they're going to set me up with a server they have in Brussels, and I haven't done the math yet to see how far away that is, but it'll be really cool if I can to demonstrate something similar like this to a bunch of people, and I'll have my whole, like, smorgasbord. I'll roll out, like, you know, friggin' cutlery, like, here's a bunch of different headsets. What do you want to try? And I'll try to let people get a taste of what this WebXR pixel streaming future might look like on whatever headset they like, especially, which I think is important because we are going to see a proliferation of more headsets. We know LG is probably coming out with the Meta Quest Pro 2 next year or their own headset. We've got Samsung and Google and of course, maybe rumors of another Apple headset next year as well. So I think the more fractured the hardware ecosystem gets, the more lovely it's going to be if it's going to be like, doesn't matter what headset you have, they're all going to run Beat Saber or whatever. You just have to go to this website and have an internet connection of at least, you know, 30 megabytes down or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sounds awesome. I'm very jealous of the folks who will get to see this at Unreal Fest Prague. And this is a good segue, I think, to talk about that because that's coming up soon.
Yeah, it is coming up soon. And I just found out the other day that I'm giving two talks, and one of my talks, which is called I Wish I Learned This Sooner, which is kind of a riff on a lot of the stuff that, like, you know, Chris Murphy's already done, which is like, here's a bunch of great tips and tricks. And these ones are specifically the things where every one of these things, when I finally learned how to do it, I was, you know, my immediate thought was like, God, I wish I learned this sooner. I wish I learned this a month into my Unreal Engine career and not 8 years. And so I'm going to try to walk people through my biggest epiphany moments. And I just found out that talk will be on the main stage at Unreal Fest Europe, which is exciting. I've never had a featured talk like that before.
That's awesome. That would be really cool.
Yeah. And
so what are the dates?
I'm heading over on June 15th, and that involves like some tech checks and stuff like that. I believe the actual Unreal Fest in Prague is Unreal 18th, 19th, 20th. And I believe it is completely sold out now. But if you email unrealfest@epicgames.com and you're like, oh, I really wanted to go, but I didn't know if I was going to have a hotel and now I know I can, whatever. If you're like, I want to be there even though it's sold out, if you email unrealfest@epicgames.com, they will add you to a wait list. And then if some new spots open up, people cancel, whatever, you do have a shot at still being able to attend. That being said, I already have a bunch of people who have contacted me saying, like, I'm not technically going to be at Unreal Fest, but I will be in Prague. There's some, like, other meetups happening, you know, around the periphery. So, you know, come by anyway if you're going to be there.
Yeah, just come hang out in Prague. Doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a terrible experience. I was told to be prepared to drink a lot more beer than water, because apparently the beer is very good and also cheaper than water. So we'll see how that goes.
Classic Europe. I'm jealous. It sounds like it's going to be a great time, and I hope everyone that's going gets to enjoy it and hopefully go see Alex's talks. Because you have more than one, right?
Yeah, the other one will be in a smaller room, and I'm glad it's in a smaller room because it's a much more intermediate metahumans talk, and this is kind of going beyond the basics of, like, here's how you create a metahuman using Metahuman Creator, and it's more in the vein of, like, here's all the weird little tricks about, like, getting the hair to look correct at various LODs, and here's the right way to make sure the head and the body stay attached. Here's some of the changes going from a 5.3 metahuman to a 5.4 metahuman and dealing with, you know, the fact that bones change and how that can mess up LODs for sequencer and things like that. So this is very much intended to be like for people who have already been in the weeds with metahumans and they're looking to solve some of those more complex problems. And that one will be called Diving Deep with Metahumans.
Lex.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, folks, make sure you check those out.
And similarly, for anyone who still is hoping to submit a talk for Seattle, you know, we talked about this on the Robert Aldrich podcast, but submit. I think you have till like May 22nd or something like that. And I think all of you, probably every one of our listeners has like a good talk in them to talk about their Unreal Engine experience. I did manage to convince Robert, by the way. He was like, oh, I don't know, I'm not much of a public speaker. And yet he knows so much about optimization in Unreal Engine that I believe he has now submitted something to go over that. And he's been incredibly helpful, by the way, Jacob. I can't remember if I talked about it in either the episode with him or our most recent episode, but my company right now is about to get our first app on the actual app store for MetaQuest. And after the Unreal podcast that we did with Robert, I was like, man, we could really use his help right now. So we actually hired him after that episode to help us with some of the more advanced optimization we need to do. And now we're kind of going through all these VRC checks with Meta. And looks like things are going well, fingers crossed. Nice. And in theory, this app will be published first week of June on the official store. No app lab, no second class citizen stuff.
Amazing. Well, I'll save my congratulations for when
Yeah.
for when it happens, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we were really impressed to find that we'd actually done more optimization than we expected once we turned on asynchronous space warp. We had done most things in the vanilla branch of Unreal Engine in 5.3, and then at a certain point, we're like, you know what? There are certain things that only work in Meta's branch of 5.3. So we went through this very hassly process of like upgrading plugins that were made for vanilla 5.3 to be recompiled in C++ and work in the Meta fork. And there's a surprising number of plugins that are at the engine level that actually aren't in the Meta fork. So we had to also bring those over. But then when we turned on it's not asynchronous, application space warp, we found that we could be targeting a frame rate of 36 and hit 72. And then we said, okay, great. Well, let's try going higher. And we went up and up and up. And now we're actually targeting a frame rate of 60, which then reprojects to 120. And it looks really good. It feels really good. And even though we were only planning on targeting the Quest 3, because that's what our arrangement was with our client, we've actually been passing these VRC checks with the Quest 2 as well. So I don't think I'm allowed yet to say exactly what the app is we have, but it's going to have metahumans and face tracking and eye tracking. And I was a little bit bummed to think that it was only going to be on Quest 3 since those don't have face and mouth tracking, but the Quest Pro does. So I'm really delighted that people who do have a Quest Pro are going to be able to check out this experience. And yeah, just a shout out and thanks to Robert for all of his help pushing our optimization to the next level.
Yeah, awesome. Now, you also had a fun experience with the Epic Games themselves this week.
That's true. Yeah, Epic was in New York City. They have had their AEC group doing a big talk over at Bjark Ingels Group at the big office in Brooklyn by the Brooklyn Bridge. And so during the day, it was all these great sessions on, you know, Twinmotion and the collab viewer template, which I always think deserves more love. I'll have a couple slides about it in my talk, and bringing a wide variety of architecture firms and ArchViz companies in the city in to do these sessions for the day. There's great swag. I got an awesome new Epic Games water bottle that has like a straw that goes in it. Very, very stylish. And new t-shirts. Always happy to see new Epic t-shirts. I'll hold up what they look like the next time we do an episode, but it's always fun to see the new designs. And then that night, there is a company called ATN. I believe it stands for the Architecture Technology Work Network. And they hosted something called Pecha Kucha at the Pub. So this is something they started over in London, where the premise of it was they're like, you know, we go to all these meetups and then we sit in a conference room and we watch people give presentations, and the presentations are too long, and then we all go to the pub, and then that's when we actually get into a really meaty discussion. So they said, let's kind of skip the first part and then go right to the pub, and then have the presentations be in a Pecha Kucha format, which if you don't know is like 20 second slides and then 20 slides, so the presentations move very fast, and then you're all just socializing and drinking the entire time. So we did not start this in the pub. It was at the big office, but there were a lot of drinks. I was asked to help out with the beer run, and they were very generous. They basically said, yeah, well, let's try to grab like 250 drinks. They said, Alex, just grab, you know, a few cases of whatever you think people will like. And so I was like, oh, sure, let's grab some, you know, hard cider and Angry Orchard. And I grabbed just regular ginger beer for anyone who wasn't going to be drinking alcohol, and Magic Hat, which is a Vermont beer I'm very fond of. So that was cool. And it was a great time. All the presentations were excellent. It was a nice variety of like straight up architecture, and then also ArchViz stuff, and pretty much all connected to Unreal because Epic was also co-hosting it. And it was a little bit bittersweet as well because a number of the people there on the architecture and training teams from Epic, this was kind of their last hurrah. A lot of them are actually retiring or leaving Epic at the end of the month.
Oh.
So I felt fortunate that I was able to have dinner with a lot of them and kind of recap their time at Epic and give them a nice hug and say goodbye. It was, and many of them I've been working with for a number of years in my independent contractor capacity. So, you know, really good people. And I might, if anyone's ever like, hey, do you know anyone you should hire or whatever, these will definitely be people on my short list.
Incredible. So what would you say are were your biggest takeaway from all those talks?
From all the talks, I would say that there's a lot of really exciting innovation happening at architecture firms now that I was both happy and a little frustrated about, and I'll tell you why. And it was perfect that this was happening at the Bjark Ingels Group office, because back in 2015, and mind you, this is before I was even in Unreal Engine, but I had given a talk with my AgileLens co-founder at the big offices, exactly the same place these presentations were happening, back in 2015, so, you know, 9 years ago, and it was all about virtual reality and how this was going to be such an incredible tool for architects and designers. And here's all the ways that we're using it over Fisher Dax Associates, and here's all the ways that you too could use it, and let us help you. Let us do some like consulting for you. And I gave this talk at a lot of different architecture firms from like 2015 to 2018, and there weren't a lot of bites. You know, Big was very nice. They sent us a nice bottle of wine to thank us for giving the talk, but we didn't hear back from them. And what ended up happening over the years, and I think this was in full force at the presentations the other night, was most of these companies eventually hired internally. They brought in really incredibly talented people who wanted to focus entirely on, you know, XR strategy and creating really compelling AR VR experiences. So the, you know, original business model that I was trying to do with my company failed, because we were trying to get companies like Big to hire us to do VR and AR work for them. And most of them just ended up building out very robust internal departments, which, you know, credit to them, all the projects I saw were excellent. There were things from KPF, there were things from Shop, there were things from Big, The Boundary, my friends over there who I've been seeing more and more of lately because we're working at similar LED volumes over in Brooklyn. And there was stuff that took place on the moon. Like some of it was very speculative and kind of going all over the place with the designs. But I was very excited to see that there's a lot of interest in how these technologies are being used, because I didn't know how much of like an actual XR presence there'd be at this event. In theory, it was more just about like real-time uses of technology in an architecture and ArcViz capacity. But there was a lot of VR and AR stuff going on, and people excited about Apple Vision Pro. Big has a app they've developed in Apple Vision Pro over in Unity for their furniture designs and placing objects, and just got to have some really good discussions. My favorite one, if I had to pick one, was with, I'm blanking on his last name, but his name is Evan, and he's kind of like the lead XR emerging tech guy from Neoscape. So Carlos Cristerna and my other friends at Neoscape, who have either been in Neoscape for many years or actually migrated over to Epic, they've been telling me about him for years. And this was the first time I finally got to meet him. And this is like a nerd's nerd. Like, we had such a geeky conversation about the past 30 years of visualization. And when he first started working at Neoscape, he was modding Unreal Tournament. You know, this was like, how do we get any kind of real-time capacity in our environment? So his Pecha Kucha presentation actually walked through that whole history. The past 20 years of real-time over at Neoscape. And that was such a treat and a delight. And I think in general, I'm just feeling good about the industry.
Good.
It
sounds like that was a lethargic experience for more than one reason, right?
I think you mean cathartic. Lethargic. It made me very sleepy.
Yes, that is exactly what I mean. Some beer, some good conversations. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. Well, I did accidentally trap some people in a staircase because everything is very locked down, and they have a beautiful rooftop garden with a lovely view of Manhattan up the bridge.
Building.
Yes, that's right. I forgot that you worked in there. So yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And you can probably understand how I ended up trapping people in the staircase.
I do. And I think I've told the story before on the podcast of how I accidentally shoved Bjark Ingels out of an elevator.
Yes, you have told that story. It's amazing. Real quick, give people the like 5-second version. They're like, what happened there?
5-second version was, it was a very busy elevator and he wouldn't move out of the way to let me out on my floor, and I just totally bodied him out of the way, turned around and realized it was Bjark Ingels.
Sorry, dude. he was not there for this particular event, but it was a great crew, and some of the people who I saw there I remember from our conversation back in 2015. So it seems like they're doing a pretty good job of holding on to good talent and amazing models. Like, we weren't allowed to take pictures while in the office, but they're still doing really excellent stuff with physical site models, some of which were taking up like, you know, literally 100 feet of space to show like a whole, I probably can't even say what they are, but you know, things that take up, things that you would need a 100-foot long model for, they are doing that kind of stuff. A couple more things before we call it quits on a shorter episode today. I just want to mention Fortnite briefly, because as listeners know, Jacob is the Fortnite expert. I'm the one who's just dabbling in it a little bit. But I do want to say that this has been an exciting season of Fortnite. I've been playing a lot with my kids. The 1-2 punch of Avatar The Last Airbender and now Star Wars has allowed us to do a lot of things, not just in how my kids and I would usually interact in Zero Build, Battle Royale and all that, but also in LEGO Fortnite. And we just got like our first lightsabers in LEGO Fortnite. And I think there's been a really solid gameplay loop developing that has definitely kept my kids and I busy. And we're always looking forward to playing together in there.
Yeah, I think I got to play a little bit of this season as well. Not as much as I would have liked, but the crossovers just keep getting better.
Yeah.
You know, more intricate, more interesting. And the game looks great. There was an event yesterday. I saw some clips from it. It looked awesome. So I'm continuing to check it out every time I can. And I'm excited for Fortnite and what it's doing for the engine, for sure.
Yeah, and what it's doing for Epic's revenue stream, which, you know, I'm sure Fortnite continues to be a major part of how they fund things, even though with 5.4, they are starting to build things. I don't know if you noticed this, Jacob, but when you open up 5.4 right now, it is like, hey, by the way, you do need to pay for this if you are making more than $1 million a year.
I haven't, believe it or not, I haven't even gotten a chance to download 5.4.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, you're a busy guy. One other thing I wanted to say about Fortnite right now is as part of the actual season, there are a bunch of gods. So you have, you know, Artemis and Zeus, so the whole Greek mythology pantheon. And that's been really interesting because there was a surprise drop a couple weeks ago, totally unrelated to Unreal Engine. And this is a game called Hades 2. It came out in early access on Steam, and it has been taking up so much of my time. Have you heard anything about this game?
I've been seeing clips of it, and it sounds like there's a very passionate fan base around it. It's not the kind of game I've played in the past. I didn't play the first, but it looks awesome based on what I've seen.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, if Epic were ever to make a deal to bring some of these characters to Fortnite, I would gobble up all of those item packs or whatever, skins and everything. The characters are so well thought out and designed, and I think this game, first of all, does such a great job of giving you a gameplay loop that makes sense within the world. In the first game, you're Zagreus, son of Hades, and you are trying to escape from Hades because you want to go meet your mom, Persephone. And so you are trying to get out of the underworld. And every time you die, of course, you go back to, like, you know, your home in the underworld, and your dad's like, you're back. Uh-huh. You know, it just kind of makes sense that he's like keeping you trapped in there as you're trying to escape. And both Hades 1 and Hades 2 do such a good job with this this balance of like action, 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 action. You're trying to escape, and then you die and you come back. And then you have this kind of deep breath where you talk to the characters, you catch up on things, you have these narrative threads and all these kinds of stories that you're learning about everyone. And the remarkable thing they did in Hades 1 that they also carry into Hades 2 is you almost never have repeated dialogue. You can talk to a character 1,000 times and they will say things that are contextual, based on, you know, things you did on your most recent run, characters you've talked to, other information you've gathered. And you'll never get that kind of standard NPC thing where it's like, in order to get the bread, you need to go buy a pineapple first. In order to get the bread, you need to go buy the pineapple first, where they just like will repeat the same information. And it just feels so lived in and real. And Hades 2 is everything that I loved about the first game. It's like a roguelite kind of thing. And I don't play many roguelites. It's really the only one. But they have figured out this kind of chocolate vanilla pattern that works so, so well. And I think anyone who's interested in like gameplay loops or narrative design should check out these games, at least as a study of a small team making something that's really compelling. So, you know, congrats and shout out to Supergiant Games, who have really outdone themselves with this early access version, which I think in the early access version, there's already more content than all of Hades 1 when it came out, and they don't plan on releasing Hades 2 1.0 until next year. So we'll see how that goes.
We're very early on, but that's awesome that it's it already feels like a game. Well, great. I think I haven't been playing anything interesting, so I don't have too many things to add. I've just been spending my 5 minutes playing Overwatch, which is not quite as exciting for the Unreal Engine community. So I'll leave it at that. But This has been a good recap. I think everyone should be excited for Unreal Fest Prague. Looking forward to the experiences we talked about. Is there anything else worth mentioning before we log off, Alex?
I was just going to say, just to reinforce what a newbie I am to Fortnite, you know what I just discovered, Jacob?
What's that?
If you buy a season pass, I'm going to say this like it's very new information. If you buy a season pass or a battle pass in Fortnite, there's actually a very good chance that you will make those V-Bucks back because of the way the leveling system works. So if you, you know, even get up to like level 50 or 60 along those tracks, you know, you get V-Bucks. And I did not realize that until this most recent instance. Yeah, you have to play it. And then, yeah, you earn 100 V-Bucks here and there. And I realized pretty quickly, like, oh, yeah, we bought a battle pass, but we actually paid for itself. You just have to play enough. So it's a very clever set of I want to say hooks and knobs and bells and whistles that Epic has to get you to spend money, especially with that notion where it's like, I'm going to make it back. It's fine. Even though you're not really making it back, as it all still is V-Bucks and in that Epic ecosystem. It's all very clever. And I'm glad that I haven't spent too many dollars in Fortnite yet, but I can very quickly see how someone could easily spend like a few thousand dollars and it would feel like a very natural progression.
Natural thing to do, yeah. And to make sure that you can get the skins you want and stuff like that. So I think they do a good job.
Yeah. So well done, Epic. We're still happy with you and all the things you are doing. Fun fact that I have no commentary on, but just worth pointing out, Unity has a new CEO. And I think a lot of people in the game dev space are waiting with bated breath to see how that goes and if Unity is going to be able to attract people back, some of whom have already fled over to Godot and Unreal and other places, or if it's going to remain a bit of an exodus because, you know, to some people, Unity feels a bit like a house on fire right now. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll continue to monitor the situation. That's for sure.
Great. All right. Thanks, Jacob. Have a wonderful weekend. There's a nice little Friday episode we're able to get out and talk to you soon.
Yeah. Make sure you like, rate, count, subscribe.
All those things. Cheers, everyone. Bye.